Yeah, yeah, check 1-2, check 1-2. Is this mic on? Is this mic on? Hey, listen, man. It's the one and only trendsetter DJ Sense, and you're listening to Cocktails, Dirty Discussions with Kiki and Medina Monroe. Yeah.
Today's cocktail is called Dick with No Complications. The ingredients you need are ice, triple sec, mezcal. I prefer Casamigos mezcal, but you pick your poison. Grenadine, lemonade, and this is how you're going to make it. So in a highball glass, you're going to pour the grenadine, stack the ice, followed by two shots of mezcal, triple sec, and top it off with lemonade. And enjoy. That's Dick with No Complications.
You know, I don't really like mezcal that much. I don't like that aftertaste.
Really? I love that smoky smell. I mean, smell and taste.
Mm-mm. But I would switch it out for just another one of the Casamigos. It does sound good. Grenadine and lemonade and triple sec. Yum. Well, welcome back to Cocktails Dirty Discussions, you guys. I hope everybody's staying safe. We do have a special guest with us today.
Yes, y'all. We have Janelle Pierce, the executive director of the STI Project. I have literally been trying to get her as a guest for, I think, over a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely been that long. Yes, I'm so glad to finally be here, and our schedules have meshed for the first time in, yeah, literally a year.
Yeah, thank God for the internet. So she has, we're going to talk to her about a lot of stuff, but before we get into who you are and your story and everything like that, we're going to play a game. And this game is called This or That. So you'll just pick one of the two options and tell us about it. So you want to go first?
Yeah. So the first one, Janelle Pierce, role play or be yourself?
Be yourself. Hmm. And do I expand on that or say like why or add some context?
I would like to know why.
Yeah, tell us why.
Yeah. You know, I've not done a lot of role play, and I know that's such a big, it's a big interest for a lot of folks. And I think actually, to be quite frank, I role play a little bit in my head, but I like the spontaneity of course, there's always like communication and a little bit of stuff of that communication beforehand as a sexual health educator, like I'm a big, like, let's talk about, is this okay? And should we do this? And are you feeling okay? And all that stuff. But even so, even after the communication happens, like, there's still, it just kind of happens as it happens in the pace that it's supposed to. So I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that there's still some, it's not necessarily all planned. Like, I'm a big planner. I'm super logical and analytical. And I have, like, lists upon lists and all over the house. So I think I like that it's just, the role play, you have to plan that out as well. So I like the non-planning aspect.
Kiki, would you rather role play or be yourself?
It depends on the mood.
I feel you.
Like maybe Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I'll be myself. And the other days, I'll be somebody else. I don't know. It depends. But I do think I probably am myself more than role play. Mm-hmm. Foreplay or get right to it.
Oh, and this is so, you know, I'm going to totally be a bad educator, and it's like, get right to it. So I'm one of the very few people with a vulva vagina who does not really, is not that interested in foreplay. Like, fingering's great, but oral, I could go without it entirely, which is which
for your
is
whole
totally
life?
Unusual. Yeah, if I had to give it up, I totally would. Like, wow. I'm a phallophile, so I love penises, and, like, I want the dick inside.
You're like, stop playing. What are you doing down happen. There? I could
exactly.
not live
Lube
without.
Lube it up.
Excuse me.
Oh, okay,
isn't
next
that funny?
One?
I know.
That is funny.
I've never totally heard atypical. Someone say that. Wow.
I've heard a few people say they're not really that into it, but not I can't live without it. I mean, I can live without it. Wow.
Whew. Okay, next one. Mm-hmm. Lights on or off?
Mostly on, but off can be kind of fun every once in a while. Like, I feel like when I was a lot younger, it was always lights off and that not being comfortable in my own skin and such. And so now I like to see, like, the body, the penis. Like, I'm heterosexual, so my partners are almost always have been male or people with penises anyways. Like, I'm masculine-centric, and yeah, so, yeah, lights on for sure. Okay, line song.
Okay, phone sex, like on the phone talking, or sexting?
Definitely sexting, 100%.
Same.
And I literally just started getting into it. It's just so much more fun. And you can, for me, it's easier to say the things I really want to say.
Mm-hmm. And then the anticipation of the response and all of that. This morning, I was trying to figure out who I could send some videos to.
You see them little bubbles. That's okay. True.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know what's funny about that too is I'm not audible and like words when I'm mm-hmm. sober. But if you give me a couple of cocktails, since we're, you know, this is cocktails, I'm all of a sudden I'm like dirty talking left and right. Like, you're going to do this. And I get a different persona. So maybe that's an aspect of role play. Like, my personality changes a little bit. My husband and I were just talking about that the other day and like how I'm a little bit different, quite a bit different in bed. And like, sometimes that can be good or sometimes it's way over the top. It just depends. Like, how many drinks have I had kind of thing. But that's exactly it, because I'd rather like write it out and know what I'm gonna say and things, and I don't I'm not very witty. I've never been a witty person, so I don't know what to say right at the in the moment.
Okay, last one. Drunk sex or sober sex?
Mostly sober, I would prefer. Like, actually am not usually able to orgasm if I am having drunk sex.
Really? For me, it's the opposite.
If I'm looking for like an actual complete... Oh, really?
Yeah.
I can do it either way.
Okay.
Three snaps to that.
Okay. So first, let me explain to our listeners why we wanted to get Janelle on so bad. One day I was just searching hashtags. Sometimes we just search hashtags to find guests. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to do an educational, this was back when we hadn't done one yet. And we wanted to have like a doctor on, or have someone come on and talk about STDs and all that stuff. And we just weren't finding the right fit. And then I came across Janelle's page and she was literally celebrating her herpes anniversary. And I was just
on Instagram,
okay. Bruh. And so I went to your page and I was like, this lady is crazy. Nuh-uh. She is not really doing this. We have to get her on the show, because I've never seen someone celebrate the anniversary of when they contracted herpes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What anniversary was it?
A giant 20th. It was the 20th anniversary. So I'm 37. I contracted herpes when I was 16 years old, super young. And I bought myself a giant Mylar balloon in an H shape, gold H. And I got naked. I got naked in my yard and took pictures all over. And like, the H was just covering up the sensitive bits, like, of course, nipples, you know, are banned, or female nipples, or quote unquote female nipples are banned on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I covered like the vulva, but pretty much absolutely like naked, like, here I am, I don't care, I'm owning it, and this is where I'm at. And it, to come full circle, like, it took me such a long time to be in this empowered place of like, it does not impact me in the way that most people would assume it does. So I wanted to, and then I had a lot of like pushback of, are you celebrating that you have an STI, STD? Like, who does that? And it's not that I have the infection. Like, nobody wants an infection. I still don't want another infection if I can help it. I've also had scabies and HPV, so I've had more than one STI. Like, who admits that, right? Says it out loud or anything? That's actually quite common. But yeah, it's not that I've had the infection that I was celebrating. It's I was celebrating that it no longer defines me, and it no longer impacts my relationship, my self-view, my self-worth, how much I advocate for myself or don't, you know, none of those things. It doesn't relate to any of that anymore.
How long did it take you to get to that point?
For me, it took a long time, because there really weren't any resources out there. Like, say, this is, you know, 20 years ago. And like, yes, we had the internet, but it wasn't, you know, we didn't have as much social media. Like, there wasn't Facebook. It just wasn't the same kind of environment. And it wasn't easy to find other people who were talking about it. Like, I really felt super alone, and I felt like I was the only one. And now I know, of course, that that's entirely untrue. And the vast majority of people contract an STI or STD at some point. But I didn't know that. So I really thought, like, everything that you hear about people with STDs, they're dirty, they're slutty, trashy whores, damaged goods, promiscuous, mm-hmm. cheaters, like all of the things. I immediately thought, like, when I contracted it, this is me. Then that's it. Then that's exactly who I am. That's what I am. That's what everyone's going to think about me. I'm never going to be able to have sex again. I'm never going to have a relationship, get married, have kids, whatever, any of those things. So, yeah, for me, it took a long time, probably into my, like, early 20s, where I was finally like, this doesn't add up. It doesn't make any sense.
Do you know, you said that you contracted herpes when you were 16. Do you know who you contracted it from? I know sometimes that's hard to, like, track. Do you know who you got it from?
That's a good question. Like, not everybody will answer it. For me, I actually don't know, because I had been sexually active with more than one partner at that point in time. And I didn't have the, like, I guess, confidence. I was petrified of, what if I asked the wrong person and then they don't have it and it was the other person. And so now more people are going to know. And I absolutely was terrified of anybody finding out. And yeah, so I don't know. And it's a good question in that it's actually not so easy to know who you contracted it from. A lot of people will assume, like, you first will get diagnosed with an STI and it was your most recent partner. But the most common symptom of all STIs is no symptom at all. You can be asymptomatic. And we hear that right now. This is relevant with, like, coronavirus, COVID-19. Mm-hmm. You can be asymptomatic, transmit it to somebody else, still not know that you have it. And the only way to know is to get tested. And herpes in particular is not tested regularly because it's not currently recommended by the CDC. So blanket testing doesn't happen. So most people don't even know. And then they transmit it to other people. And then you can have a dormant infection where you don't have any signs or symptoms. And then all of a sudden you get an outbreak. Like, I did have an active outbreak, a first outbreak, and that's how I initially got diagnosed. But some people never actually get an outbreak. So they just, they're carriers and they can transmit the infection, but they actually don't ever had signs or symptoms.
When you got your first outbreak, did you know, okay, this is herpes? Or were you looking like something is wrong down here? And if you don't mind, like, what did it look like for you? Because the picture sometimes can be really scary, and then sometimes it looks like nothing, looks like razor burn.
Yes, and it really does run the gamut. Like, it can go, it can be just a small, like, tiny cut or tear, or like feel like a little abrasion, or you can have like a, I would say, like a half dollar size outbreak, fairly decent in size, tons of little blisters, and they're painful, uncomfortable. They start to itch at first. So for me, I had kind of what you might assume or what you might see in Google as like a traditional outbreak. And it was on my vulva, on the lips, and it was super uncomfortable.
Did you tell your mom?
Decent size. Yeah. So that's the thing. So at first I was like, I saw this, I was uncomfortable, I noticed it, I knew something was going on. But I wondered if it might be an STD, STI, and I was hoping it wasn't, of course, because that's, everybody always hopes that. And but it got worse, and it finally got to the point where it was so uncomfortable and it wasn't going away, and it was, more blisters were popping out, that I finally told my mom and said, like, I have something happening. And so she looked at it. I had her look at it. And she knew, in hindsight, she tells me this later, that she thought she knew exactly what it was, but she was also hoping, just for my sake, that it wasn't herpes, just because of all the stigma and, you know, the ramifications, the social ramifications of having any STI, but herpes in particular, because it's forever. So, yeah, so I did have the actual physical outbreak, super uncomfortable. And the first outbreak, I should say that, like, with the caveat that the first outbreak is always usually the worst, and then over time, the severity and the duration of the actual symptoms tend to lessen and get fewer and farther between. And that's been true for me too.
Mm-hmm. How long was it between your first outbreak and the next one?
Ooh, I don't know that question. I get regular outbreaks. So some people, like I said, will get one and then they never have another, or some people will never get an outbreak, or some people are like me and they get one once a month. And so right now I'm on suppressive therapy. I take an antiviral Valtrex every day in order to reduce the number of outbreaks, as well as that also reduces my partner's risk of contracting it from me. So there's multiple benefits for me in particular, and for my body and how my body has responded to the virus. That's worked for me. But I want to say maybe a couple of months. I wasn't getting them like super frequent or recurring at that point in time, but everyone's body's different. It's based on your immune system and stuff. But I can't remember when the second one was actually.
Did you, since you were so young, and I'm sure that you went through some type of denial, depression, like what are the feelings that you feel when the doctor does come back with your results and it's like you actually do have herpes?
Oh my gosh, for me it was awful. I mean, absolutely 100% one of the worst experiences of my entire life. I mean, truth be told, and not to be, I'm not trying to be superfluous or, you know, over sensationalize this. I mean, this is actually, most people will tell you similarly, that initial response. And also to make it worse is I had this doctor, he was just a general practitioner. I grew up in a really small country town outside of a bigger city. And so he was just like, he was like our family doctor, you know, he like wrapped our arms when we had a broken arm, and he diagnosed flus and colds and, you know, any manner of things. So at the time he took one look at it, walked out of the room, didn't say anything. And then, you know, said, you can go ahead and get dressed. And while I waited for like what seemed like 5 hours, I mean, I'm sure it was only like 10, 15 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. He came back in and said, you have herpes. It's the worst case I've ever seen. And here's a prescription. Dang.
Well,
oh, my God. Yes.
Talk and about I had no like, kind of bedside manner.
Oh, my gosh. Horrible. It was awful. I mean, not only do I have herpes, which means I am all these things, shameful, trashy, damaged, slutty, all these things that you, these misconceptions and myths that are associated with STIs. Not only do I have it, I have the worst kind. So I'm the dirtiest, the sluttiest. You know, that's what goes through your head. That's the way in which that internalized stigma comes out and how you process it. And and there were no resources, no empathy, no support. And of all the people who you would think would be empathetic, you would think a medical practitioner, a doctor of some kind, a clinician would be the most empathetic and understanding because they would have seen this and have experience. And so that additionally added another layer of like, well, if a doctor says this is the worst that they've ever seen, which also is untrue and ridiculous because there's horrible pictures online of like,
right,
you know, blue waffle. Don't Google that. I mean,
I've Googled it before.
No. I have too.
Yes. Is that a form of herpes? Is blue waffle herpes?
No, it's before, like
I heard everybody
when you
talking
see
about
those
it.
Worst case scenarios. It's third world countries. Somebody who's immunocompromised, who's very very ill, who doesn't have resources, who is already usually has coexisting conditions. I mean, there's so many things that usually is depicting. It's not the traditional. Even the fact that I had a bad outbreak, like I said, it was probably the size of like a $0.50 on probably on each side. I don't remember exactly how big it was, but it wasn't covering my entire vulva. Like my entire private parts weren't all covered in blisters. Like it was enough to be super uncomfortable. And like, I didn't want to wear underwear or sit down or put a tampon in. I mean, all of that stuff was like, absolutely not, but it still wasn't one of those things that you see like in sex ed classes that are just trying to shame you into abstinence. And anyways, yeah. So for me, like the doctor was awful, which made it worse. And there weren't any resources. And so my overall feeling at that time, I cried the entire way home. I still remember my mom had a minivan, a red minivan. And like, you know, you see these like specific pictures in your head and you just can't unsee these things when something traumatic like that happens. And I don't remember actually saying this, but mom says that all I said was, nobody's ever going to love me again. No one's ever going to want me. What am I going to do? Like it was pouring out of me, tears pouring down. I do remember like bawling the entire 15 minutes to get back to our home in the country.
And but was your mom supportive? Did she make you feel better? Or was she like,
it's going to be a long road.
Yeah. Or was she like, you shouldn't have been having sex? Like,
No, I was lucky in that way, and that my mom, like, even before this had happened, like when I first got my period, she sat me down now at the kitchen table, which is kind of funny in hindsight because it didn't have to be this specific of a conversation. But she sat me down, grabbed a cup of water and a tampon, and showed me what a tampon does and expands in your body. And she was like, so this is what happens, you know, if you want to use them, and this is what happens in your body. And it's great because this is an option if you don't want to use pads and whatever. So my mom was pretty sexual, sexually liberated, sex positive, and has mm-hmm. always been pretty open that way. So she absolutely did not like shame me. She just felt so horrible for me. But I think at that time, no matter what she was going to say, I thought, you just don't know. And like, you can tell me that I'm beautiful, amazing. I'm still going to be able to have a wonderful life, and this isn't going to make a difference, and it's okay, and you're none of the things that you're saying. You can say that, but especially as a teenager, like no teenager thinks their parents really know what mm-hmm. is going on. You know, like that's just the perception or skewed very, especially young teenagers and young adults. It's like the worldview is so minimal and small at that point in time because of lack of like just exposure to all variety of things and diversity and such. So you naturally just think like, no, you don't know. So no matter mm-hmm. what she was going to say, I just didn't believe her anyways, basically. But she was really great, and bless her heart.
So how long was it before you had sex again? And when you did start having sex again, did you let your partners know that you had herpes?
Oh, so good question. I'm so glad you asked that. Did you have a follow-up? Did you want to say something?
Well, I was going to say that's kind of where the denial part comes in for me, because I do feel like obviously a lot of people have herpes, and I can count on one hand how many people in my whole life have said, I have herpes, mm-hmm. and it is not even using all my fingers. It's probably like three. And
I only know one person who's ever told me that they had it.
So I'm curious to know, I feel like part of that denial that part comes with people saying, acting like they don't have it. So I'm curious to know your story on that.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is even though, you know, like Kiki knows one, Medina knows like three or four or something, really the reality is you probably know like 20 or 30 people, you know, or like mm-hmm. especially in your even close friends and family and whatever. But just that's nobody's talking about it and sharing that, and people are in denial. And quite honestly, I was too. So this was part of my motivation for the work that I do now. And when I launched the STI project, was I didn't always disclose ethically. So to answer your question, the first time I had sex after, I didn't tell the person. And it was a friend's, my girlfriend's boyfriend's friend. So mm-hmm. she was dating a guy, and his friend came over, and like we were smoking pot, doing some things, like there weren't any parents home, all hanging out. And one thing led to another, like they went off to go have sex. And so it's just him and me. And then and she knew that I had herpes, then told him later, was pissed at me, and understandably. But I just really had no idea like how to have this conversation, how to have a conversation and still have casual sex. And mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I was 17 at that point in time. Then after that, even with that experience, knowing that this is not necessarily what I want to do, like I wasn't intending to harm anyone. I wasn't trying to put someone's sexual health and health at risk. I just had zero idea of how to have this conversation. There was no like practical, just peer-to-peer advice, like realistic conversations. There was zero guidance. So I really was mortified and had no idea. And like, and that's not an excuse, right, to mm-hmm. do the wrong thing, but that's really the result and reality of why that happened. And so that's exactly part of my motivation, is I thought, if I don't, there's a problem that exists. I know I cannot be the only person who is not disclosed to somebody and then had sex with them, any kind of sexual activity. So am I a horrible shit person? Am I allowed to swear? Beep. Am I a horrible crap person? Okay. So yeah, am I this shitty person? No. Did I do a shitty thing? Yes, absolutely. So how do we fix it? Well, we can't fix it if we don't acknowledge that the problem exists. If we don't say that there's tons of people not disclosing. And why aren't we disclosing? Well, the tons of reasons why we're not disclosing. There's no practical relevant resources. We're not sex positive. We're not encouraging conversation. I mean, you know, I can list them all off, but again, that won't happen. We won't disclose. We won't have these conversations that are helpful if we don't actually address it and acknowledge that it happened. So I'm like, well, I'll own it and own that I didn't always tell people and I didn't always know how. And that was shitty. That was awful of me. It's not ethical. And I could have harmed people and or did. And that's not who I want to be. And it's not who I see myself as. But sometimes even the best people do some crappy things. So how do we fix it?
Did he end up getting herpes?
I don't know. I don't know about him. That was a one night. And then I did have another partner after that, that's the only partner that I'm aware of I've ever transmitted herpes to. And that was a long-term partner. We were together for 3 or 4 years, and that was also 17 years old. Same thing. I did the, like, ask for forgiveness, not permission, and told him after the fact and realized, like, I can't not tell him ever because that's going to cause an intimacy issue and a trust issue, and it will no matter what now because I've already put him at risk and whatever. And he was actually really amazing about it. And like my first disclosure, that was my first actual disclosure when I told him, because the other guy I didn't end up telling. He heard through the grapevine, through the friend, but I didn't actually disclose face to face. So I still hadn't had experience with having that discussion. In my first disclosure, I was a hot mess. I was like bawling and, you know, I was still processing the trauma and all of it. And he was super cool. And he did end up contracting herpes. And then after that, I've had other partners who I've disclosed to and who haven't contracted herpes from me. So that sometimes happens too, which is kind of a side note, but if you're newly diagnosed and it's a new infection, you're more likely to transmit it to other partners. And then more established infections, usually you have antibodies in your system. Also, you know, safer sex practices or ways in which to reduce risk. And you're aware of the symptoms, the prodromal stuff, the like something is coming on, an outbreak is starting, so on and so forth. So I digress. But anyways, yeah. So it's been like a big journey to try and figure out what's a good way of having this disclosure conversation.
So when you have the disclosure conversation now that you know more, what is that conversation like?
So there's a few pieces of advice. There's two schools of thought, first of all, around when to disclose. I guess that's probably the first step, is when should somebody disclose? And some people, like, obviously the most ethical thing is before putting someone at risk. So you must tell them before actually engaging in sexual activities. But from there, like, you could tell them, it could be on your dating profile, it could be on your Tinder, and some people do that. They put it right bold out there. And
I have seen it that profile there before.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes. And there's actually some benefit to that. It's 6 to 1, half a dozen of the other, quite honestly, because the other side of that is waiting until the relationship is kind of heading in that direction. You've established some trust. You're feeling like you're into this person and you can see it heading in that direction. And then you disclose. So if you put it right out there, right up front on your dating profile, there's a level of risk and safety. Not everybody is able to do that. But the folks who want to do that, the benefit and the reason why some people tend to go to that side of the spectrum is that they are not emotionally invested at that point. They don't know the person. So somebody might just swipe left and and so they didn't even know that that happened. They didn't even know somebody decided to say no as a result of their status, of their STI status. So then they're not emotionally invested. They're not feeling hurt as a result of that. But then the other side of it is there's a level of risk if you want that out in kind of a more public fashion, and not everybody's able to do that. There's a halfway point, which is kind of interesting. So there's numbers on the keyboard. It's like an old school traditional phone, or like your keyboard on an actual computer keyboard. You spell out herpes. It's like 437-437, something like that. It's a combination of 4, 3, and 7. So that's like an indiscreet, but somewhat out there, like right away in your profile. But then you also have to assume that the person knows what those numbers are, and then you still have to ask them and follow up, like, do you know what that means? So then you still have that conversation anyways. And then the other side of it, this is what I've tended to do because it just fits my personality and relationship style. I'm a serial monogamist is what I would call myself ostensibly. But like I've had a lot of long-term relationships, like 2 or 3 years and then another 2 or 3 years and 2 or 3 years mm-hmm. and such. So for me, it's made sense. It's made sense to do like wait until I see the relationship heading in that direction mm-hmm. And then to disclose. So, yeah. So
are they typically like the upset with you?
Options.
Okay. Are they typically, have you ever had someone be like, why the fuck would you not tell me this up front?
No, actually nobody's ever said that. Which I kind of wondered, some people I've seen online when discussing disclosure, I've seen some folks kind of flippantly say like, if you wait, that's a bait and switch, and that's really unfair to the person because you're basically leading them on until then you tell them this horrible thing about you, ostensibly, mm-hmm. quote unquote, this horrible thing. But my argument to that and why that's an illogical assumption is nobody puts everything out on the table the first time they meet somebody. Nobody says, I have a brother in prison. I'm $100,000 in debt.
Even mental illness or something like that.
Yes. I mean, mm-hmm. there's like 5 million different things that could be no's for people, that could be a hard no, all different mm-hmm. reasons, right? That people decide like, I'm not going to go there. Like, absolutely not. This is not going to work. But nobody's going to tell you all of that shit right on the first date. Like, that is not even realistic and like normal human interaction. Nobody does that. We're all in our best behavior. We're all trying to present ourselves in the best light possible. Like, that is just how that works. That's courting, mating, dating, whatever. So I think that that's some BS, some next level BS, and it speaks to the stigma. It speaks to the pervasiveness and how severe the stigma is that somebody would put an STI status as worse than pretty much anything else that you could possibly say or do. And it's just not true, first of all. The reality of living with an STI is very different than that kind of assumption. And there are so many worse things that actually relate to your character and like how living with you or loving you or being with you might actually relate. Like an STI is something you have, not something you are or something you do. And that's the distinction. So yeah, I've heard that in comments, but I've never actually had that experience at all. Actually, the people who I've disclosed to have all been like, oh, that's what you were going to say? I thought you were going to say something so much worse. Like, okay, no big deal. And they've all been like, wow, that's not a thing. And it shocked me. Every single time, I always just assume there's going to be someone who is mm-hmm. not okay with it. And I know that in other people, mind you, other people have told me for sure that they've had a bad disclosure or a disclosure where it turned out being a rejection or the person mm-hmm. decided not to move forward, which I don't even necessarily would call that bad because that might be actually a benefit. And that might be like the universe just working in the way that it needs to, because that person wasn't going to be aligned with you anyways. But anyway, so I know that people don't always have that amazing experience and have that reaction. But for me, I mean, everyone's just been like, okay, so that's it. Like, that doesn't change who you are. Like,
have you ever told someone and they were like, I have it too?
No, you know, that's shocking to me and surprising because, I mean, like I said, I'm 37. I've had many partners at this point in time. I don't even know the number. Not that that's relevant or matters or whatever.
None of us like, do, girl.
Yes. Cheers to that. Like, amen. So, I've literally not had anybody, which is unusual because herpes is so common. So, although... Well, that was going to be a different story. I'm going to share this story in a different like moment or something. Anyways, I'm going to scrap that in because there's something I can share about that, but I haven't actually met haven't had a partner who has herpes.
Okay. Do you think that you can you still have fun sex having herpes and having to tell everyone that you have herpes? Like, can you still have a threesome? Or like, do you go to sex clubs? Like, how do you still have fun sex with herpes? Because you don't want to be the one to be like, everyone calls you in the morning like, we all got it. bitch.
Right. Well, they wouldn't even know if it was from you or if it had, I mean, you wouldn't know that fast, right, of true. Course, but right. I mean, you know, in just for the sake of, you know, entertainment, but yes, you absolutely can. You can definitely still like hook up and have casual sex. You can have multiple partners. Before I realized and figured out like I'm a serial monogamist and that just suits me and my personality and my and what feels good for me, I did try swinging in multiple partners and a semi non-monogamous relationship and as well. That was along the same time that I did swinging and went to some sex clubs and things like that. And you'd be surprised, actually, in that environment, there were a lot of people that had herpes and that talked about it or that disclosed, or that some of it was they just disclosed certain boundaries of if we're they would only want to do certain activities, and they would say they would want certain barriers involved, whether it be like dams, or usually dams weren't used. I would love it if they were more common, but just nobody uses them. But most people wanted condoms.
Oh, dental dams.
In that environment, dental dams. Mm-hmm. And yeah, internal or external condoms. And yeah, so it just depended on the environment. But the answer, the short answer is absolute yes, of course. It just includes an additional conversation. And it's not even really additional. In a non-monogamous, in the non-monogamy community, in the polyam community and ethical non-monogamy community, there's already a lot of conversation that happens that is a little bit additional on top of what the monogamous hetero community does. And it's great because it's thoughtful, it's helpful, and it encourages and aids in the pleasure that is had. And that's the whole point of all of it anyway. So yeah, it's actually really lovely. And I wish that the monogamous community would be a little more receptive and learn from the folks who've experienced this and done a little bit more of a casual sex and or multiple partners at a time, multiple relationships. So yeah, absolutely. Tons and tons of folks that I consult with are polyam or, you know, enjoy just casual sex and don't really want a relationship at this point in time.
Are there dating apps and or sex clubs geared towards people who have STIs and STDs? And do you think that that doesn't help with destigmatizing the whole thing?
Yeah, that's a super good question. So I'm not aware of any sex clubs specific, like, although, okay. So first of all, there are STI dating apps like Positive Singles, and some people love it and some people hate it. And some people do feel like an STI specific dating app actually contributes to stigma. However, and I can see the point there or where that's coming from, but here's what I would say about that. Everyone's going to be a little bit different. And after a very traumatizing diagnosis, where the number one question that I get from so many people is, how am I going to have this disclosure conversation? How am I going to tell a new partner? Is anyone ever going to want me again? I mean, that is those things in any different style of language comes out over and over and over again. So sometimes what's nice about like an STI specific dating app is it helps people to break the ice again, to like get back out there and realize like, wait a minute, like I got this. I don't need to self-segregate. And I don't think anyone needs to. I've actually never, even though I'm the spokesperson for Positive Singles, and I've actually never specifically dated people with herpes or even sought that out. So I think that it fits for some people and some personality types. Mm-hmm. It's also a way to find additional people and meet other folks who have the same experience. And a lot of times there's like additional community links and blogs and stuff like that. So in some ways it's a way to find some resources. It's a way to start dating again if you're absolutely petrified of having that conversation and getting back out there in like a more traditional sense. But I don't think that is necessary or that people need to self-segregate at all. And that assumption would contribute to stigma.
You're married, right?
Yes.
How long have you been married?
We've been married now. I've been married 3, going on 4 years. It'll be 4 years in December. We've been together almost five.
So how did your husband feel, or how does he feel now, about you being so vocal about having herpes online?
Yes. It's so great because he just did a TikTok with me. I just got on TikTok recently, and like, I'm
I
such a
Karen. I still don't know how to work and it.
It's fun. I mean, it took me a minute. I seriously Googled and watched a whole bunch of YouTube videos of like these teenagers saying how to get viral in a week, how to get TikTok viral. And I did. And these were like literally 16-year-olds telling me how to do this. And I'm like, I don't care. I'll learn from whomever. I mean, hey, if you've got it figured out, like help this old lady figure this stuff out. So anyway, yes. And I did get called. I got called a young Karen on TikTok. TikTok can be brutal. Oh, my gosh. Which I thought was endearing. I was like, that's the first time I've ever been called that. So I was like, whatever. I'm going to make sure to call the manager.
But so your husband, is he ever annoyed with how much you talk about having? Is he ever like, Janelle, why does everyone need to know?
No, you know what's funny about it is the reason he reached out, he like hopped into my DMs and he was speaking about the work that I was doing. And so at the time, so this is kind of a cute story. We met on, well, we didn't really meet on Facebook, but he reached out to me on Facebook. I had been following a sexologist who was doing with her husband 88 dates with her husband, and they would go on these dates, and it'd be like some of them would be expensive, some of them would be like a picnic, all sorts of things, and then they'd rate them like on a scale of 1 to 10 how much they enjoyed it and how much it cost, and then she'd post pictures. And when she first started doing it, I was at the end of a long-term relationship, and I was feeling like salty because I wanted to do that with that partner, but we just weren't there. And so then we broke up and I was single, and I'm like, well, now what? Like, I really wanted to do this 88 dates. I thought that was super cute. And I thought, you know what? Fuck that. I'm going to date myself. I'm going to do 88 master dates. I'm going to master date. And I'm going to post about master dating. And so I was doing this master dating. And
what's master dating?
Like masturbating, but dating.
Like, like dating myself.
Oh, got you. Okay.
Masturbating, master dating. Mm-hmm. So, which I didn't do that. I could have actually done like try a masturbation that. Date. So I would go on like these little adventures. I'd do like a walk at a nature center or whatever. And I'd rate it on a scale of 1 to 10. How much did I enjoy it doing it alone? Like every once in a while, there's something you really wish you could share with someone. It doesn't necessarily have to be a partner. You just wish someone was there to be like, oh my gosh, check that out or whatever. So I would rate it. And then he said, like, this is such a cool idea. Like dating hasn't been working for me. And he hopped into my DMs and he said, like, I love everything that you're doing. And he was like, your empowerment and your confidence is so wonderful and beautiful. And you're so inspiring. And this is when I was a public STI educator and advocate. So it was actually my work that got him interested. So that's true for I've had so many more people reach out and like hit on me and want to see if I'm single and all sorts of things, you know, as a result of doing this work than even beforehand, which shocks me, but it's wonderful. And it shouldn't shock me, but it's wonderful.
I think that gives a lot of our listeners who have been told that they have herpes hope. And even if you don't have herpes, like that just gave me hope that like there is somebody for everybody, because
and if something changes and you do happen to get it, it's not the end of the world,
right? And you can't
continue
to date.
Feel that way.
Yeah. I mean, you just, that is kind of what the rhetoric is around herpes. It's like, oh my god, who is gonna want to have casual sex with you? But what you're doing is phenomenal, like spreading the word and making people feel comfortable having that conversation, or if you've had it already, like the next time you have to have the conversation, that must be very I feel like it can be stressful if you're not comfortable with it yet.
Yeah, so stressful. And it's okay to not want an infection, right? Like that makes sense. Like we don't want any additional malady or health issue. Nobody does, but like that's a part of the human experience. Our bodies are amazing, but they're not infallible. So we try to reduce our risk as much as possible, but you make a calculated risk with everything you do. Like when you go to the store, to the grocery store, nowadays you might grab your mask, and before you even get driving down the road, you buckle your seatbelt and you look before you turn, and you do all of these things, but you still could get in a car accident. You still could contract coronavirus at this point in time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all sorts of risk out there, but what do you want? You want to eat, you want to go and get some munchies or whatever it is you're getting at the store at that point in time. Who cares whether it's essential or not? I mean, there's a risk reward calculation that happens, and pleasure is so important, and intimacy and touch and sexual activity and enjoying that and wanting that, if that's something that you want. You know, there are folks who don't necessarily want that, and that's okay too. But yeah, nobody wants an infection, but if you do contract one, it is going to be okay. It's not the end of the world. I know that's hard to believe even when you're experiencing it, but I mean, I would wish everyone knew that so much.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you will have the answer. I hope that you do. I want to go back to like having herpes and the fact that it can lay dormant in your body and you have to ask for the test because they're not just going to give it to you. Are there times where it's more likely you can get an accurate result? Is it only during an outbreak that your result will be the most accurate?
Well, anything when there are signs and symptoms is much easier to diagnose. However, to speak to more of along the lines of like testing for herpes, if you don't have any signs or symptoms, you don't have an outbreak and you would like to get tested, you would have to ask for it. You might have to pay for it. And you may get some pushback from the provider because it's not currently recommended, like blanket testing and regular testing for herpes. But if you still were like, I really want to get this done, I really want to get tested, then yes, after like 4 to 6 weeks of exposure. So say you hooked up with someone and you would like to add herpes testing to your whole STI panel that you're getting done, waiting 4 to 6 weeks, you're going to have a much, the result will be much more likely to be accurate at that point in time. It's much more likely to be accurate the longer you wait. So if you, and this is the tendency, most people will have, you know, like a spontaneous whatnot on a Friday, Saturday, and like, or an oops, they might feel like it's an oops, like, especially if it wasn't really that enjoyable. And that said, on Monday morning, they're like, oh shit, like this is, I need to go in. I need to like get tested and figure this out right away. So if you did have exposure, there is some benefit to going in right away because there are some things that you could take that might reduce your risk of contracting some infections immediately. However, if you get an STI panel done on Monday morning after a couple of days later after a hookup, none of those results are going to be accurate. They're all going to say negative and you'll actually potentially have an infection. So yes, like the actual truth be told, you need to like pause, take a beat, and then wait a couple of weeks and then get tested.
That's what makes it so easy to spread anything.
Yeah.
Especially herpes.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Because you did get tested, so now you feel like I don't have it, but you didn't realize it's too soon.
Yeah.
And then Friday comes again and it's, oops, there goes my skirt over my head. Again.
Oh man, I had a question and it just left my mind. We were talking about it was a
like
good
how
one.
How hard. Okay, what did I want to ask you? I know I already asked you about the your personal outbreak. So I'll tell you guys this. So there was this guy that slept with him before. And it had been like years since we slept together. He called me one day and he had an outbreak. He didn't know what it was. He went and got tested. Test came back positive. So he's like running down the list. Mm. So when he gets to me, and I'm sure the list was very long because that's why I stopped sleeping with him. But that's beside the point.
Do I know him? Mm-mm. Okay. I'm nosy.
She is. See how you try to slide that in there. No, you don't know him. But so he gets to me and he's like, hey, I have to talk to you about something. Are you sitting down? So I was like, how'd you get this number? Changed my number. But anyway, so he's like, oh, you know, I have herpes. I have herpes 1 and 2. I got tested for it. I have it. And I was like, well, I knew you had the one where you get the fever blisters. Like, you told me you had fever blisters. I knew that. I don't think that he understood that that's part of herpes, but, you know, whatever. So I was like, okay. So how long have you had it and why didn't you tell me before? Like, I'm a little confused. He was like, well, I just got tested. And I just found out. I honestly don't know where I got it from. So I don't know if I exposed you to it or not, but I want you to go get tested. I'm really sorry if I gave it to you, but I literally just found out. I'm going to email you my results. It's got a date on it, but please go get tested because if you have it, I want you to be able to do something about it. So I was like, okay, well, no, I've been tested for it. And I knew beforehand to request to get tested for it just from being super anal online. I knew to request the test. So I had been tested, but I had never had an outbreak. So it's like, okay, well, I still could have had it. Let me go back. So I went and, you know, he called me later and he was like, you know, I really appreciate that you didn't flip out on me because everybody I called before you flipped out. And I was like, well, just me. To me, it's like, okay, it's really inconvenient. Sounds very uncomfortable to talk about, to have, and everything. But at the end of the day, as I really thought about it, what else does it do to you besides give you an uncomfortable rash? So I was like, you know, I appreciate you for, yeah, I appreciate you for telling me. And it let me realize, like, don't flip out on people and it's not the end of the world. And then he was like really depressed about it. And so I was just trying to be like, even though he wasn't my friend, I was still trying to be a friend in that moment because I recognized he needed it. And I just hope that more people can be honest with people when they find out that they have it and let them know, because I really appreciate it. And it was eye opening because it was like, okay, I inspected it. I didn't see anything. But what does that mean? He still had it and he has no idea how long he had it.
Oh, there's so many things that you just said. Two good things. First of all, good on him, because so many people aren't going to do that. And I don't necessarily think that there is a responsibility for somebody to go back through all of their old partners unless they feel like that is something that they need to do, unless they feel like that is the most ethical thing. I actually think that that's a gray area of unless it was just an immediately recent partner, that might
he probably only called the girls he wanted to come back to. Honestly, I'll just tell you that, because this is not a good citizen. It was the ones he wanted to come back to. I doubt it was everybody.
But then the second part of what you said was good, is that so many people think like, yeah, I'll be able to tell. I'll know, you know, like I'll be able to see something.
I'm going
to
see the bumps.
Yeah, exactly. Well, first of all, no one's going to be having sex when they have an outbreak or when they have serious symptoms, the vast majority of people anyways, because that shit is not comfortable. Like, that is the last thing you're thinking about, is how you want to get down with some sexy time. Like, no, thank you. You just want to like hide in your sweatpants and eat some macaroni and cheese and watch Netflix. Like, that's even like somewhat miserable, you know, like absolutely not. So that's the silly part, is everybody just thinks they're going to know, and that that's not the people that they're with. And they'd be able to know. And it's just, no, sorry. Sorry, that's not
so
how that works.
So I remember my question, and I'm not sure if you would be able to answer this, but why is herpes, since so many people have it, why is it not just already with the check? Why do you have to request it? Do you know that answer?
Yes. So that's a really good question, because most people assume, like, first of all, when people get an STI panel and they say, test me for all the STIs, test me for all the things, I want to get tested for everything, and then they come back and they're like, I'm clean, I don't have anything, I was tested for everything. If somebody tells you all of those and uses those words in that language in particular, any piece of that language, that means that they're not fully aware that they can't be tested for all the things. They can't be tested for everything. If you're sexually active, there's actually no way to know that you're entirely negative for all infections, because all infections, they don't have tests for. And herpes in particular doesn't usually get tested and is not a part of an STI panel. And the reason why is because there's a few reasons. One, the testing efficacy, meaning like the reliability of the test, varies greatly across the different types of tests that are available. They're not very there's a lot of negative or false negatives and false positives. And there's more false negatives than there are false positive. False negatives mm-hmm. are super common, and for the reasons we just talked about, right? Like you can get tested and have it, but you're too early. So that's part of it. Then also, if you do, and herpes testing is a blood test. So if you don't have an outbreak and you just get a test, it's a blood test. If anybody ever asks you or says we have a urine test available, that's some crap and junk and don't do it. That is absolutely not the way to test for herpes and is not reliable whatsoever. So just as a side note. But anyways, if you get a blood test done and you test positive for HSV-1 or HSV-2, you don't mm-hmm. know where it's located. There's no way to tell. So HSV-1 was traditionally thought of as like the cold sore, the fever blisters, you know, like mm-hmm. Kiki was talking about. But now we know that that can be transmitted through oral sex genitally. To the genitals. So that means if you get a blood test and it says, yes, you have HSV-1, is it highly likely that it might be oral? I mean, highly likely that it might. That's contradicting in and of itself, the words I just used. But that's exactly the point, is that you don't know where it's located. And yes, it could be oral, but it also could be a genital infection. And vice versa. HSV-2 mm-hmm. is commonly and most often genital, but it can also be transmitted orally. So you don't know where it's located. And then that in and of itself causes all sorts of like concern, questions, trauma, unnecessary confusion and frustration. And so some medical practitioners kind of believe along the lines of like, if you're not getting an outbreak, what you don't know is not going to hurt you, because knowing mm-hmm. is going to be more problematic. You don't know where it's located. You don't know when you contracted it. You're going to ask all these questions mm-hmm. of who did I get it from? There's no way of knowing. So there's a massive amount of uncertainty. The cost is expensive. There aren't a lot of very reliable tests out there. The ones that are reliable are much more expensive, you know, so for all of those reasons, that's why the CDC currently does not recommend testing. The times that they do, like you guys have said already, yes, you can ask for it. And in some places are going to be more receptive to that or say you can get it, but you'd have to pay extra or whatever. But the mm-hmm. times that it is it's recommended expensive. Is if you do have an outbreak or if you do have signs or symptoms, then they definitely will get a test done for you. And or if you've recently been with a partner whom you know actually has herpes. So like say you slept with mm-hmm. me and then you knew and said, I just hooked up with Janelle and she has herpes and I know she has, like, can I get tested or whatever? So all my past partners, you know how I said I was like a serial monogamist, all of them have gotten tested. And I've only, like, as far as I'm aware, I've only transmitted to one, because after we were done in this long-term relationship, they were all like, okay, well, is this something I'm going to have to deal with? Because they also knew at that point in time it could be asymptomatic.
Mm-hmm. Once I learned that you had to ask for the test, I honestly, y'all, I lied to the doctor. I was like, oh my God, my boyfriend cheated on me. I told the same lie every time. My boyfriend cheated on me. He told me he's been cheating on me for a year. He has herpes now. I don't know how long he's had it, and he's already a liar, so I don't trust anything. Then cue the tears, and I'm like, can you please test me? But it was all a lie. I just wanted to keep getting tested, but I knew that they would give me pushback because I read it in my favorite magazine, Cosmo. They had like a whole thing about herpes, and these girls share their experience. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't know this. I need to go get tested. Mm. I've been having sex with a lot of people. I gotta figure this out. But yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Hey, so maybe do that if your doctor is giving you pushback.
That you might have read the article that I was in. I was in Cosmo. I flew to New York
and I might have
did a photo shoot. And wow. It very well could have been. But it's a shame that, like, you know, Medina, you said like so many people have it. Like if we were just aware that so many people had it and this was more a well-known mm-hmm. well-known knowledge, if this was more accessible and understood, then there wouldn't be such a stigma. Because part of the reason that stigma in general exists in any kind of marginalized group or community mm-hmm. and here's a good like example, if you think of the LGBTQI community, if you look back in like the 1970s or 80s and you ask someone, do you know someone who's LGBTQI? And most people would be like, no, I don't know anyone who is in that category, who that's their identity. But nowadays, if you ask anyone, everybody knows someone who's LGBTQI or many someones mm-hmm. and people who are close to them, who they love, respect, trust, mm-hmm. and admire. So once you start to actually personally have a relationship with people in these, whatever category we're talking about, whatever stigmatized category or marginalized group, in mental health is another stigmatized one, but everybody knows somebody who struggled with some sort of mental health, anxiety, depression, whatever. Now it's not as easy to group all of these people into a category and say they're all crap, because now I care about and know and love someone who's in that category. So we can't just lump everybody. But when you talk about STIs, that's not true yet with STIs, because most people only know at max if they even know one or two or three. And in reality, especially with herpes in particular, but all of them, there are so many people who have it. But because there's not regular testing being done, and because it's asymptomatic very commonly, there are all these people who have it. Nobody's talking about it. Even the ones who know that they have it are definitely not sharing that stuff unless they absolutely have to. And so we go along thinking, oh, it's only these kinds of people, quote unquote. It's only a small portion of certain subsets of society, when reality, it's everyone. It's all of us.
It probably is. Before we move on to indecisive, Diane, I'm curious to know, do you have any tips for our listeners about living a healthy lifestyle with herpes? Like, as far as even like things that people might not know, like changing your eating habits. I know one of my girlfriends who was diagnosed and married now, congrats, girl. She had to take a lot of sugar out of her diet. She said that she noticed certain things that she was eating that would cause outbreaks. And so do you have anything to share with our listeners about some tips, like just some tips?
Yeah, so I think this is going to be specific to each individual and everyone. I encourage everyone to do their own research and determine what is going to suit their body and their needs best. But that said, there are definitely certain things that trigger outbreaks and that are known to trigger outbreaks, like chocolate, sunshine, L-arginine, which is an amino acid, and that's in nuts and different kinds of foods, and not to list them all, and that would get really boring, but there are definitely certain foods that that would trigger an outbreak or trigger symptoms. And there are other things opposite wise that would counter that. And then, of course, your immune system and how healthy you are on a regular everyday basis impacts and contributes to your symptoms and whether you're asymptomatically shedding a little bit as well. That said, I don't feel like that's going to suit everyone, and it's not accessible. Like, for all people to just all of a sudden now we're going to eat all the fruits and vegetables and all this non-GMOs and whatever. So I hate to, I am not one of those people who's going to say, like, this is all the things you need to do to make your body the healthiest, to have the least amount of symptoms or things. There's definitely tons of information out there that will talk about the stuff and the foods that you can eat. And you definitely absolutely can. And sugars in general sometimes impact, if you're a person with a vagina, impact the vagina in a lot of different ways anyway. So that might be something you might be interested in, just because, just for the health of your overall yoni. But I think it's going to be specific to everybody's resources and access and what is really going to suit their lifestyle, what is going to make sense for them.
Cool. Okay. All right, y'all, we're going to move on to Indecisive Diane. And when we come back, we will read some advice letters.
Would you stop thinking about what everyone wants? Stop thinking about what I want, what he wants, what your parents want. What do you want? What do you want?
It's not that simple.
What do you want? What do you want?
Okay, Diane, what date idea do you have for us this week? They're kind of starting to open stuff up back in Atlanta. What you got for us, girl?
Hey, ladies, it's me, Indecisive Diane. I'm going to keep this short and quick and to the point. Have a picnic with your loved ones. They're starting to open up the places back in Atlanta. Find a cute little park. I wouldn't suggest Piedmont or anything like that. Find a cute little quaint park. Take a blanket. Take a sheet. Take the dogs. Take your mans. Take your lady. Take your kids. Take some snacks. Take a bottle of wine. Hell, take a hookah if you want. have fun, have a picnic, get some vitamin D. And I don't mean, okay, girl. Thanks, Diane. No problem, ladies. Bye.
Okay, and now we're back and it's time for advice. Remember, if you would like some advice from us and possibly, if we have a guest, the other person too, send it to askcocktails@gmail.com. That's askcocktales@gmail.com. And perhaps we'll read it on the show. Now you go ahead and read. I'm going to be listening. I have to use the restroom.
Okay. Okay, Janelle. So our first advice letter, they put in the subject line, horny as hell, but watching my body count. So she says, please don't read out my email address. Girl, we never do. I don't even know why you said that. Hey guys, I love your podcast. You guys are great. Keep shining. So I recently, 6 weeks ago, got out of a 5-year long-term relationship. This guy was my first everything. And honestly, I thought I was going to marry him. And my love for him still runs deep, but ultimately we just want different things for our lives, so it's never going to work. So here's the thing. We last fucked 2 months ago, and that's the last time I got any action. I'm hella horny, and I don't want to increase my body count. I have a religious background and a strong culture. So really, the fact that I even slept with my ex-boyfriend is a big issue. But I'm horny. So my question is, can I just sleep with my ex for now until I find something solid that will hopefully end in marriage? Confused face.
Oh, wow. There's so much to unpack there. So
there's so much.
I feel like you can do whatever you damn well want to. And like, is there some risk in sleeping with your ex emotionally? Definitely. Maybe there might seem to be less of a like a physical risk in terms of safer sex and STIs and such. But also, do we know what your ex is doing, and are they sleeping with anybody else, and are they going to be honest about that? So there still may be the same level of risk as if there were a new partner. Secondarily, what about like self-pleasure, masturbate? And I know that gets a little old, and if you want like actual like, you know, skin hunger in another individual. So there's that. But I know like, you know, you had the same face, Medina, of like, oh man, even the there's such a contradiction. And I can empathize with that too, because I grew up in like a religious, went to youth group and all of that, and was in the small rural community. I hate that word. I can't say it very well. But anyways, so I think that there's like a confliction of like you, this person is aware that it's okay to want pleasure, to be horny, to seek that or need that. And that is a human need. It's a human right. I believe. So the body count is like, what is that? What even is that? I mean, that's so subjective and ridiculous and harmful. It's harming that person. And I think that that's kind of like something that needs to be considered and processed of like, should we unpack that? Should we unlearn that? Because would that help empower you to make the best decisions? Because there's all sorts of things you can do too that are lower risk, like different kinds of activities that are still intimate, still sexual, if you don't want like P and V with more people. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
I personally am going to say like the body count, girl, goodbye with that. But if that's like your personal thing, okay, cool. But like, no, I emotionally cannot, and I've done this before, you go back to an ex and you're making excuses to keep them in your life. And I feel like that's what sis is doing. I don't think that if you still have feelings for someone, if you want to get married and that person does not want to marry you, I don't think it's smart to go back and share your body with them. Because if you are anything like me and your emotions are on your sleeves, your feelings are going to get hurt. God forbid you accidentally get pregnant and you're not going to end up with him. I mean, I feel like people don't look at some of the risks that you're taking. Maybe this last time you go sleep with him and you get pregnant, bruh, and y'all don't want to be together, or whoever doesn't want to be with whoever. I think there is enough dick out here for you to find somebody else.
I think it's only okay to go back to somebody who you strictly had a just sex relationship.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter. If you've already established in the beginning, years ago, months ago, however long ago, that this person, you don't have that emotional connection with them and you went to them to seek pleasure and then maybe you stop because you got a boyfriend or a girlfriend or whatever, and then you go back. I think that that can be okay. But this, no, I wouldn't do it. You're going to be confused. You're going to be crying. Then you're going to send another advice.
You're going to be crying. Be different.
Don't have sex with him. Get a toy. They're still shipping. Amazon people may be mad, but like we said earlier, not essential, essential. It's a risk involved. Just take it. This is going to be better than like crying.
Don't do it,
sis. A toy, your hand. Like, I mean, goodness. And that it's so true. Like the emotional risk is not being considered. It's like the physical risk somehow outweighs the emotional risk. And actually the physical risk is usually short term and or right. kind of like non-big. It's not a big deal other than that this emotional stuff really can mess with you for long periods of time. So that's the risk that this person is considering taking to just reduce a physical. And there's so many other options physically.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Next letter. Okay. Hey, Kiki and Medina. I love the show and y'all are like my best friends because you know you can't tell your real friends all the juiciness in your life. So I need an outside opinion. I'll try my best to keep it short. I've been in a situationship for 2 years now. I'm 22 and my lover is 27. He's Nigerian, born and raised. So, you know, the dick is amazing. We met off Tinder.
Do we?
I don't know. Sorry, sis. We met off Tinder and fucked the first day we met and never left each other since. Now we've got into it a couple of times, but one time about a year ago, I asked him if he genuinely likes me and he said yes. So I was content. I feel like he really likes me. I want to say love, but I don't know if I'm dragging it. Anyway, this Valentine's comes up and I act a whole ass because I didn't get asked on a date or nothing. I brought it up and he said he hates Valentine's Day and he doesn't do anything for anybody, which is a lie. I checked his ex's page, and here's a little background. They were together when they were like 14, and he moved to London, then America, so it's kind of a failed relationship. So we think. She posts this candy she got and then says the details. Like, bitch, what details? He's millions of miles away. Then posts him and doesn't say anything on the picture or her story. We argue. I asked if they're together. He said he isn't with anybody and he's single. She posted other people like friends and stuff, but I'm confused. Fast forward, I let it go because if you say you're single, you're single. But he was really upset that I asked. I want to move forward with him. I don't want a relationship, but it would be nice to know that somebody is there. I'm still young too, so I don't want to miss my husband. Or nothing, but what if he is my husband? Every time I get with somebody else, it's not competition to even compare. Now, it's like I can't stop thinking about him. To be honest, I feel like I'm really in love with him, every bit of him. He treats me right. He answers when I call. He seems like he cares, but I don't know what to do. So should I just leave it alone and let them be, or give it a little while and have a talk about it, or just leave? Signed, a love dummy. I'm going to add some pics of me, the girlfriend who's not the girlfriend, and him. I'm the light one, by the way, sent from my iPhone. I don't know why you see the pictures because it doesn't matter. Okay. This is what I think about it. I think, like, you said he does all of these things and he makes you happy and you don't even want a relationship. Why are you worried about what else he's doing? Sending chocolates to somebody in Nigeria and he's in America. Are you trying to go on 90 Day Fiance?
I was just about to say, you better be on 90 Day Fiance.
What's going on? I don't get it. Like, I feel like you're stressing yourself out, and maybe it's because you feel like you want to talk to your friends about it and they're going to run an investigation and be like, girl, he's talking to this girl. Let that go.
Let it go. The crazy thing is, when y'all send in the advice letters, which we really do appreciate, you know, send them for next week, askcocktails@gmail.com. But sometimes with some of these emails, I know, and I don't even know you, sis, but I know that you know you need to get somebody else because you sent.
Just make a decision.
You sent a 5-paragraph email. You know what you need to do.
It was long as hell. Yeah. Yeah. Like if you're going to, I think you personally need to get over it, but if you can't, which you probably can't, you have to let him go, because then you're going to be doing little things and it's going to ruin all of the greatness that you say that you have. You don't want that. Like, do you want to be happy or do you want to be miserable? Mm-hmm. At some point, you have to make a choice. And if you dealing with him because and knowing that he has this other girl that he may not be with, but he has some relationship with of some sort, if that's going to bother you, that's not the man for you.
And that's that.
Don't be afraid to be alone for a minute.
Janelle, do you want to add anything?
I think y'all said it really well. She is the answer. She actually knows. She said it. It's just, it's the having the answer and doing the thing that needs to be done, whatever her answer is that's that second jump and leap and step. And mm-hmm. I think she's saying her needs aren't being met, even though she's saying like, mm-hmm. this is all great. That's all great, but there's a but. There continues to be a but. And if there's a but, then that's a problem. And your needs, you deserve your needs being met, as all people do. And if that relationship is not doing that for whatever reason, even if things are amazing, you either have to accept that this is exactly how it's going to be, because that individual is showing you and making it clear and actually communicating even like what he does and what he wants to do and how he wants to move forward. And if that's not going to suit you, you can't change that person. You can't make them do what you need and what you want. So at that point in time, are you fine with that for the temporary time being? And are you going to open it up and potentially see other people because maybe you'll meet that husband? Or are you not able to do that? Like, not everyone's able to do the multiple partner thing. And that can seem like a lot of work or a lot of juggle, a lot of emotional stuff going on. Then you know the answer. You know the answer, Chica. Mm-hmm. Like, you got it. You got it in you. You just got to do it and take that leap.
You got it, girl. You got it. And that... Janelle, that brings us to the last segment of our show, which is cocktails. Once upon a time, not long ago, I was a hoe. What cocktails is all about, what helped grow this show, is Kiki and I giving our personal, very raw sex stories. Embarrassing.
I've said way too much lately.
I am so embarrassed.
I hope you have one, Janelle, because I have to save mine for another day. I've been out of control, and it's quarantine. I shouldn't be out of control, right? But I am, and I think I've got some better stuff coming, so I'm going to save mine for next week, personally.
I am, too, and honestly, we're over time, okay, and well, I might have another one.
What do you have?
I don't use the word should, and even in coronavirus time, I don't use the word should at all. I don't use absolutes.
I'm
going to
take it out.
I think you should take that out, because seriously, absolutes and sexual health and sexuality, like, yes, that's... The reality is that people aren't going to stop touching or being involved with people for months at a time. That's not healthy. That's not even going to work. It's not practical. Like, so if we're not helping people make some decisions about, okay, what is going to be, like, how are we going to mitigate our risk as best as possible? Like, that's what we need to do, is empower people to make the decisions that feel good for them. If you're using should about yourself, then maybe you feel like, I don't know why you feel like it might not have been.
Because
these
are new things. It's not like I had a boyfriend and I'm still trying to sleep with my boyfriend. I'm like letting just whatever I want to do every day, I do it.
Which I'm going to do later.
I know. Don't be jealous. I'll tell you the story. Yeah. I think that's the thing. That's the reality. That's what folks are doing. And so you're doing, just like true. I talked about earlier, you're taking a calculated risk because you want the benefit of what's going to come out of that interaction, that like sexual experience. And so, and hopefully it keeps paying out, you know, hopefully it keeps being beneficial.
It's paid out every time so far. So like, I just feel like I'm on a winning streak. So I'm just going to keep it there.
Mm-hmm. Go with it. Exactly. You know what you need and what your body needs, and that's all good. So, okay. So my story. So you said these stories could be about like relationships, dating, sex, something personal, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I alluded to this earlier because we were talking about this. This is the only thing I knew about the questions you might ask, you know, on the podcast. And I prefer not to know because I like it to be just as candid as possible. And so I usually don't have anybody like let me know what their questions are going to be. But right before we started recording, of course, you were telling me that like we're going to talk about like a story. Do you have a story to share? So I had an idea in my mind, but then it almost came out as we were chatting because it was relevant. So if it sounds like I was alluding to something and stopped myself, this is why. So all right. So yes, I have herpes. I have genital herpes HSV2 and I get regular outbreaks. I've also had HPV and I've also had scabies. So I've had multiple infections. Scabies is a good conversation. I have two stories, but
and I meant to ask you about that.
Do you want to hear about scabies or want to hear about genital warts? Pick. I could tell you both. But
that's a this or that. Scabies or genital warts?
Are they both long? Because I kind of want to hear them both.
Let me see
stories about either one.
Neither of us are sharing. Okay. All right. So which one do you want to hear first?
Scabies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So scabies is a parasite. There are three different kinds of STIs, viral, bacterial, parasitic, and scabies is a parasite. Scabies is a tiny little microscopic bug that burrows underneath your skin, and the bug itself causes skin irritation, itches, and like a red spot on your skin. Then the bug defecates in your skin. That also causes irritation. And then the bug also lays eggs in your skin, and that also causes irritation. And so it is kind of gross, right? Because most people are really kind of irked out by bugs in general. And so even though I don't like to try and say stuff around STIs is gross, scabies is kind of gross when you think about bugs under your skin and all the things that they do and all the things that are causing
laying eggs, defecating. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And there's a little trail, like you can see the trail that the bug has traveled on your skin and everything. And
that's through what's your itchy.
Skin? Now it's cute. Yes, yes. Like a little path on your skin and you can see all the little spots.
Do they pick any part of your skin? Or this is like...
So this is where, okay, so this is what's kind of interesting about, this is what's funny. So one of my exes, we had first started dating and actually he had, at the time, I had asked him, are you hooking up with anybody else? I'd had the conversation like, are we being exclusive? I just want to be like aware, should I get tested? He knew I had herpes and he said, no, not hooking up with anybody else. So I start itching. And it starts on my thighs and it's like just itchy and weird and a little bit of red rash. And I think like, I didn't know what I thought. I didn't know what it was. Like, it just seemed kind of benign, like not a big issue. And I really didn't know anything about scabies at that time. I really wasn't I didn't do this work. I wasn't an STI educator. And so it starts there and but then I like kind of let it go. And I think like it might pass. It's not, it might be an allergy. Like I'm having an allergy to a new detergent or something that I'm eating. Like who knows what this is. Anyways. So like a week or two goes by and it's on my arms now all of a sudden, you know, cause it keeps traveling around your skin and your body and things. And if you let it go long enough, it'll cover your entire body ostensibly. And so I'm sitting at work. I was an accountant at the time and I'm sitting at work and I'm walking up to the people that I work with in the accounting office. And I'm like, what do you think this is? Like, I've had this forever. It's not going away. And I'm like showing them my arm. I'm showing them my scabies. But at the time, I had no idea that's what it was. Finally, I go into the doctor because I'm like, this just isn't going away. It's itchy. It's irritating. It's spreading. What is this? And sure enough, it's another STI on top of one that I already have. And I'm like, what the actual F is going on? I literally just told everybody I work with about this rash that I have on my body.
So now they're going to want to know.
They're going to want to know what my results were because I told them I'm going to finally go to the doctor. Like, it's not going away. I put like, you know, antibiotic cream on it, hydrocortisone cream. I tried all these random things. I switched my detergent. I mean, this was a few weeks into where it had spread throughout my entire body and I'm showing everyone at work.
You done told everybody. You're like, look, girl.
I did. I told everyone. I had no idea that this could manifest in this way. And at this point, it was on my arms, right? So it started on the thighs, but like at this point, it had already gone into other parts of the body. So an STI just did not occur to me whatsoever. So anyways, I did end up like confronting my partner at the time, and you know, he was not just exclusively hooking up with me, of course. And you know, like, it was horrible. Like, I was so super mad, super frustrated. I'm like, I already have one infection. I had a conversation with you. I did my due diligence. All you had to do was be honest and direct, and then at least I wouldn't be like taken off guard and feel betrayed. And
oh,
whatever.
So he knew he had it.
He knew that. Well, no, he was having sex with other people. He didn't know that he knew he had something going on. And like, basically, he got it right around the same time that I did. He gave it to me, but because he was the only partner I had, he had multiple partners. And then he knew, like, yep, okay, it started on my thighs too, and it spread and it isn't going away. And so I called him and said, well, you have scabies, you gave it to me, and now you have to go get cream. And it goes away really fast. You put like cream on your whole body, like super sticky, thick cream. And then you have to wash all your sheets and stuff because it's like a little bug. It can be transmitted. And it can be on surfaces or on like soft tissues or like clothing and stuff like that. So yeah. So I had this bug in my skin and like horrible heebie-jeebies, like grosses you out. But wow, luckily it's temporary and goes away. Scabies, interestingly enough, can also be transmitted, and this is somewhat common. Is one of the STIs that you see in like daycare centers or amongst like childcare providers and stuff, because it's a skin to skin transmitted infection. So if it's in children, it's usually not sexually transmitted at that point in time. It's just because it's a close contact kind of thing. But in adults, it's almost always sexually transmitted. In this circumstance, it was. So yeah, that was my third STI that I'd had at that point. So genital warts. Yes. And the bug thing is what's kind of gross about it. Like, when you think about the whole, like, how it all works and everything. I like bugs. Like, I love spiders and all sorts of, like, creepy crawly things and whatever. But even that was, like, ew.
Not
I don't
those
want
scabies, though, girl.
No. I don't need one living in my skin. Not in that kind of way. Like, not that's going to bother me. We have bugs that live in our eyebrows. You know, we have a lot of, like, simpatico relationships.
Wait, I'm trying to look like, wait a minute, what?
You didn't
if
know
you,
that?
If you go down YouTube, if you get in a black hole on YouTube and you start looking at all the bugs that crawl on you when you're sleeping that you really can't see, and they're in your mouth, and you'll go crazy. Don't watch it.
So earlier genital you warts. Asked... Genital warts. So earlier you asked if I had ever had a partner who had herpes, and I had never had a partner who had herpes, or at least that I was aware of or that they knew, and that we had that conversation, at least in that regard. But I have had a partner who's had genital warts, which is HPV, the low-risk kind. The low-risk strains are the ones that cause genital warts. And this was before we had hooked up. We had started dating. We had made out, like, had a little hand action, like, nothing, like, serious whatsoever. But I definitely wanted to go there. Like, I super very much wanted to fuck this person. And I was like, yes, this is I want this very badly. And was very much into him, and I had told my best friend at the time too. I was like, we're gonna have sex. Like, I wanna have sex with him, and that's gonna happen the next time I see him. I already know. And we had only seen each other a couple of times at this point in time, but I was like, I can't even wait. Like, that is not gonna happen, and I don't even care if it's first date, second date, whatever. Like, that is not a thing. So he and I was already doing this work. I was already working as an STI educator and advocate and running the STI project. And he'd sent me a message and said, like, hey, I have something I wanted to talk to you about. I have genital warts. And immediately I thought, oh, fuck. Like, I already have one long-term infection that causes, like, a physical unsightly kind of thing. Like, nobody wants blisters of any kind. That sounds icky, you know? And so because I get active outbreaks, I'm like, I already have this forever infection that causes small blisters on my body. Like, oh, how much do I really want to do this with this person? Like, oh, you know, I had to go through this like process. And simultaneously, I'm like, I'm this educator advocate. So they're telling me, with the assumption that probably that of all people, I'm going to be the most receptive and open about it. You know, I'm going to be the most cool, or at least the most like nonplussed by this disclosure of this information. And he was getting like active warts and had had them treated, and then they were coming back. And so they weren't going away at that point in time. And warts are like long term. They're not forever, but they can last up to 4 years. They say like 6 months to 2 years, most people clear them. But this person ended up having them for like 3 to 4 years. So anyhow, even after getting them like burnt off or like, you know, frozen off, you can get them like cauterized, you know, and go into the doctor and have that done. But that's still, the virus is still in your system. And so they can still then populate and come out again. Mm-hmm. So I did. I had to go through this giant mental process of how much do I want to have sex right now with this person? How much am I into this person? Can I wait for somebody else? Like, can I just enjoy myself? And I masturbate and enjoy that and whatever, and I'm cool with it and whatever. But I also definitely wanted to have sex with this person. So I ended up deciding to, and it was
sex is some so of the best sex. Hard to say no to.
Oh my gosh. Well, not only that, because it is truly a drug. I mean, once you get into that point in a relationship, your mind is creating different kinds of drugs that are not happening on a regular basis, and your decision making changes quite a bit. And this is kind of one day we'll have to talk about the disgust factor. In psychology, there's a factor of disgust. And so, like, you can Google the psychological disgust factor, and that changes. This is why, like, parents, moms can get puked on and clean up poopy diapers and whatever. It's because you love that individual. There's this bond, and that's intentional so that we can care for people. Like, you can care for a dying parent and, you know, do the same kinds of things that you would do for a baby. Similar things happen when we start engaging in sexual activity or intimate relationships with partners. Our disgust factor goes down. And so things that we normally would think like, ooh, that might be bad, you know, that are good for us in terms of like, this helps us to stay safe in our life is to avoid things that might be risky. All of a sudden that changes and our disgust factor and our level goes down. So we're not as worried about it because we're into whatever is going to happen and we're creating a bond and whatever. So yeah, the chemicals in our mind changes and everything. And I made that decision, but I don't regret it. It was actually really lovely. As far as I know, I didn't end up contracting any genital warts. I didn't have any physical signs or symptoms. I might have had the HPV virus for a while, but I didn't end up having any symptoms. But it was definitely something that I had to talk to my best friend about. And I was like, girl, I don't even know. Like, I already have one infection. Like, and I'm supposed to be cool about this. But the disclosure was via text message. So that's kind of another thing about having that disclosure conversation is that some people will tell you like, oh, you have to do it face to face and sit down and have this like thoughtful conversation with someone. And I don't think that that suits all personality types and people.
Some people might just be like, hey, I have herpes. Are you cool with it or not?
Yes, exactly. And for me, I loved that it was via text message because I got to chew on it for a second and not have that immediate, like, I didn't have to immediately respond. I wasn't worried about, am I making a face? Because I shouldn't be making a face because I'm educated and empowered about this stuff and informed. But really, I'm thinking, how many more infections do I really want in my whole life? And how many, and what if this doesn't work? What if I'm not going to be with this person for a long term? And this is just a temporary thing. Now I have two infections to disclose that have like symptoms of not necessarily delightful. They're not, you know, what anybody wants necessarily. So anyways, yeah. So I've had the experiences of the infections. Like, who says that?
Janelle, I just want to say thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story.
For sharing your whole real, raw story. You know, that is what this whole show is based off of. Like, sex is great. Wet pussies are amazing. Big dicks are even better. But it's not every day that you get someone who is so open about their STDs and has an anniversary for them. I appreciate you. I think it's dope what you're doing to try and break that stigma. If there is anything you want to plug right now, where can our listeners find you? I know a lot of people are probably going to hit you up like, I need to tell my boyfriend. I feel like a lot of people are really going to come to you and be like, wow, this is great that you do this.
Or can you help me through what I'm going through?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I get 10 to 12, I don't know why that number came up, but 10 to 12 messages every day on each of my platforms. So I'm at the STI Project on everything, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. So at the STI Project, and then also the STIproject.com. And then I offer consultations. So if you want to talk to me one-on-one, that's for a fee, but I have tons of free stuff as well on all of those platforms, lots of information, lots of resources. So if the fee is not accessible, then please you know, scroll through my highlights. I answer a lot of questions for people all the time. But I'll do like a one-on-one consultation. Then I'm also launching a masterclass, which is an 8-week course to help people kind of get to this point of we don't give any more F's about the stigma and it's not impacting us and how to walk through and unpack. And yeah, so that's a whole giant course that's offered and that's going to be launched in the next month or so. And yeah, but any time that anyone wants to reach out and see what I'm up to, like I said, I do a lot of stuff that's just off the cuff and intentionally free and resources that are available for everyone all the time.
That's great. Well, thank you so much again. I hope that you guys reach out to her. If you have any questions, if you need any help or guidance, or just need somebody who you know can relate, please reach out to her. And if you guys want to send us emails about your cocktails, send them to cocktails.atl@gmail.com. If you'd like some advice on possibly a future episode, send it to ask.cocktails@gmail.com. And then make sure you're following us online on Instagram. We are at Cocktails Podcast. I'm at Kiki Said So.
And I'm at Coffee Bean Dean.
And until next week, you guys, goodbye.